prospecting definitely has a time and place in our prospecting cadence. So this week on the Sales Playbook podcast, I thought it might be a good idea for us to have a little discussion about where and how does email fit into your prospecting cadence. We're going to kick around some best practices that I'm going to share with you, as well as some mistakes that you absolutely have to avoid. My name is Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems, and I'm the author of the YourSalesPlaybook.com blog and your host for the Sales Playbook podcast. I've personally trained over 20,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. Okay, so our game plan today is to talk about where and how, and even like when does email fit into your overall prospecting cadence. Now, one of like a little like goal that I have for today is to challenge your thinking about email and the placement of it in the overall cadence. I want to get you to think about it a little bit differently. And you know, like some of you guys out there, I mean, and I almost feel like I say some of you gals, but then you sound old when you say shit like that. And I don't talk that way. So, you know, I don't even know what to say. But like, so, some of you guys out there, as we say in New York, you've been doing the same shit over and over and over and over again. And what I always tell people is that I'm in sales 35 years now, and I got into sales at the ripe old age of 18 years old, and back in a faraway time and place called 1983. And what I always say to people, could you imagine if I was doing the exact same shit that I was doing back in 1983? Man, I would be a freaking dinosaur. I mean, I would be, like, it would just be like so archaic, those tactics today. Now, business moves at the speed of light. So we have to welcome change at a much, much faster rate than we're doing it. So my advice to you, keep an open mind. Let's see if maybe we can get you to think a little bit differently about how you've been embracing email. So again, the whole topic today is where and how and even when does email fit into your prospecting cadence. So the first thought that I have for you is, it's kind of a question that I don't want you to answer out loud. It's something I want you to think about and ponder. Where does it fit in your prospecting cadence? Is it your first touch? Because I know that a lot of people, I own a business. So one of the things I always say in this podcast, and I'm in a really interesting position because I'm in the trenches like you guys. I am the only member of Castain Training System. So I am out there regularly beating the bushes and picking up phones and sending emails. And a lot of you guys know that I'm telling you the truth because you're on the receiving end of a lot of my emails and my efforts. So I really try to practice what I preach. But I also, because I own a business, I am the target of a lot of emails and phone calls and selling efforts. And I can tell you that most of the first attempts that people make to engage me are through email. So my thought is this: if that's your first touch, my question for you to kind of like challenge you a little bit is, why is that your first touch? I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I'm just saying that when, especially if you're not really getting results from email, if you're not getting responses, it usually doesn't lead to anything for you, and you feel like it's just falling like flat on its face. Sometimes you have to look at the sequence of things. If that's your first attempt, maybe that's not the best thing to do. Again, I'm not telling you it's right or wrong. I want to get you to think about it differently. So the question might now be asked by you, and rightly so. All right, well, Paul, if I've been using email as my first attempt, what can I replace that with? Now, here's a suggestion. and it's something like nobody does. One of the things you can do instead of reaching out to somebody for the first time through email, what if you used, and I call it a blank card. What a blank card is, it's picture a greeting card. Now, many companies have these, so you know, you guys might have them already. Or if you had to have them printed up, it's not going to be something that you have to sell off a kidney and like remortgage the house to be able to afford. A blank card, picture a greeting card, and on the outside is your company branding. In fact, if you don't want to put your company branding on it, maybe it's like your branding, your personal branding, your picture, and maybe like kind of like a logo for yourself or something like that. But for the most part, the way I do mine is my name of my organization is Castain Training Systems. So on the outside, I have all the branding and the little tagline, sales tips for the aspiring sales rock star, the company logo, which those of you who know me, you know that I am a Star Wars fan. So I just happen to do my logo in that kind of Jedi-like font. I don't know, just for the hell of it. For shits and giggles, as one would say. And on the outside, I have the branding, but on the inside, it's blank. So this way, I can write notes if I want to make it a thank you note. If I screw up and I gotta say sorry to somebody, it can be a sorry note. Whatever the hell it is. It is nice, and we call it blank because it is blank on the inside. I think that should be a part of every salesperson's arsenal, by the way. So I want you to imagine something. Your very first impression with someone now, instead of it being an email, like everyone else does, right? Your job is not to be like everyone else. Your job is not to be a Me Too sales rep. It's to be different. How could you possibly expect people to think that your solution and your company and doing business and the experience is going to be different if you show up in the same shitty way as everyone else? Seriously, how could you possibly expect people to say, oh, well, you know, I mean, like, this email they send me sucks and it's like everybody else's, but I bet that, but they're very different when it comes to doing business. People don't think that way. You lost them at hello. So what if you were to approach them through a handwritten note in a blank card? Now, my inner wise ass leads me to kind of say that, do you really think they're going to get a handwritten note from you? And they're going to say, oh, that's wonderful. That was so kind of you. Will you do me a favor and put it in the pile of all these other handwritten blank cards I've received, like this week or ever? My theory here is that you will be the only one who's done that. That's my feeling. So what if you were to approach that way instead of the email? So again, we're talking about right now, where does email fit in your cadence? Now, if you're like most people, it's like one of the first things, if not the first thing that you do. So that's the first thing I want to challenge you on. The next thing, if you've been listening to me for a while, you're going to give me an eye roll. Because this is something I talk about probably too much, but it just like legitimately pisses me off that people do this. I find it annoying. I find it very needy, and I find it extremely typical. Now, and this has to do with the cadence. This isn't just me ranting about something like, you know, just like thinking I'm being cool here, just being all negative and complaining about stuff to you. But many of you guys were taught, and there's like a lot of sales thought leaders out there preaching this, that after you leave a voicemail message, you immediately send an email, and in the subject line, you put like voicemail, or you put phone call or something like that. And, you know, like it's funny, because there was somebody, it had to be 10 years ago, almost 10 years ago on my blog, like right when I started blogging, who referred to that as the double tap method. I am going to tell you that it is extremely annoying when you've called somebody, and chances are if they don't know you or they're busy or they're a C-level executive, they see the call coming in and they're going to blow it off. That's what happens, right? I mean, you do it, don't you? Don't make like you don't. You damn well do it. I do it. Right? We all do that. Now, they see the call coming in, like, I can't take this right now. Or maybe, like, you know, you've called so many times, they see it. Or, like, how about on the caller ID? They see Castain Training Systems, right? Yeah, I don't know that I need training. Right? It's that jackass Castain. Let it go to voicemail. So they decline the call. So imagine now, not even 2 minutes later, you're getting an email pop-up from me again. And you're like, wow, what a pain in the ass this guy is. So, and there are even people out there that appreciate, I think they call it like a trifecta or something like that, where it's like you're leaving a message, you're immediately sending an email referring to the message. And I'm going to get back to that in a minute, by the way, because I have a thought about that and like supposed justification why people are doing this. But then, like, the trifecta part is when you add a third element in there, like hitting them up on LinkedIn immediately after you send the email, or now like text messaging them. You know, don't you think that's annoying that inside of about probably 3 to 5 minutes, they have now reached out to you 3 times? Don't you think that comes across as a little bit desperate? Now, like what people are saying to justify this, they're saying that, well, you know, people are so busy, they don't check their voicemail. Well, first of all, I cry bullshit on that. They're going to check their voicemail. It's irresponsible not to check your voicemail. I do believe that they're going to check it and be very, like, have the finger hovering over the delete button or the fast forward button because they're busy. But don't tell me they're not going to check their voicemail. That to me is like ancient mythology right there. That to me is just like just bullshit. It doesn't add up. So don't kid yourselves into thinking that. Then the other thing is, well, you know, they're so busy that you need to let them know that they have a voicemail message. I mean, do you really think that someone who's at decision-making level, because that's who you're probably contacting, I'm guessing, right? That's who one of the people you should be contacting. Do you really think that somebody reaches a decision-making level by being an effing idiot and not knowing that, like, duh, you got a voicemail? You don't think that they can handle, like, a rudimentary exercise, like knowing that they have, like, a voicemail? You don't think that somewhere along the line somebody taught them voicemail or, like, phone 101? I mean, do you really think that we're really dealing with, like, a stupid dick here? I mean, really. I mean, I just don't know how, like, more blunt I could be with you. It is idiotic and insulting to someone for you to have to do that. And I wish you wouldn't do it. And my reason is, aside from the fact that it just irritates me, right? Surprise, right? I mean, you thought all along I was an advocate of it. But my thing is, why would you do what everybody else seems to be doing? It is just not a good practice. So that's one of the things that I want you to watch out for. So again, like, where and when do emails fit into the process? Now, one thing I do want to say before we go on to the next item, because I don't want to just sit here and piss and moan without giving you guys some tangible stuff to take away. The thing that I want to say, there is absolutely nothing wrong with following like a voicemail message or a phone call or whatever with an email. But why not give it some time to breathe instead of smothering somebody with too much? Do you think that when people come at us with a lot of things within a short period of time, we might get a little bit cautious, maybe even a little defensive? Maybe even we're creating kind of a like a bad stimulus response thing where you keep approaching them and approaching them and approaching them and approaching them. That's the stimulus, and the response is now it's like cat and mouse, and they're going to go out of their way to avoid it. I mean, it's just something to think about. The next thing that I want you to think about is how you use your email within the cadence. So a lot of the time, we were taught in an email that you should have a call to action, right? I mean, I hope you're using some kind of a call to action. A typical call to action might be click here for more information. It could be reply to this email, right? That's like kind of like your call to action. What I teach is the opposite of that. And you could certainly, I think you still should use a call to action. But I actually teach a reverse call to action. A reverse call to action, instead of asking them to do something, you ask them to do nothing. Seriously. Again, before I go on here, remember what I said earlier. Your job is to be different. Your job is not to be another Me Too salesperson. If you're not getting responses and you feel like you're getting blown off, what other people will be quick to tell you is you're not creating value. And that's a whole other thing. I don't even know what the F that means. I mean, seriously, it is a cute thing that people are, you're not creating. Okay, like, what do you mean by that? Explain to me what is valuable and what could I be doing to create value? And I guarantee you say that to somebody and they can be I got nothing. I just thought I'd sound like everybody else and say you're not creating value. In a way, you're not creating value. But, I mean, if people aren't getting back to you, maybe it's because you're sounding like everybody else. You sound like a Me Too salesperson. There's nothing there that made you stand out and that caught their interest. So with a reverse call to action, what you're doing here, again, you're not asking them to do anything. Instead, what you're going to do is you're going to tell them what you're going to be doing next, but you're going to use my potato chip method. My potato chip method is very, very simple. It's make them hungry and put a little mystery and create anticipation for your next outreach, for the next attempt or the next touch, whatever you want to call it. So let me give you a few examples of how you might use a reverse call to action. The first one, I'm just going to come right out and say you're welcome, because you're going to say thank you for this shit. If you've ever felt that just people never answer their phone, one of the ways that you can move the needle a little bit, you're not going to get like tremendous results, but if you were getting like no results with people picking up their phone or very little, this is going to be a welcome change for you in responses from people. But what you can do when you have people that just like never answer their phone is you send an email with a reverse call to action and the potato chip method. And what I recommend that you do is make it very, very relevant to the recipient by doing your research, right? Duh, everybody taught you to do that. And kind of beginning with my famous phrase that I always tell you to begin with, I noticed that. Now, you're going to tell them something that you noticed that you might be able to help them with. So let's just say in my case, I sell sales training, and I noticed that you're going to be hiring a bunch of reps in the Northeast. So right away, I'm talking about something that gets their attention, because if they're a decision maker and they're responsible for hiring sales reps and supporting them and making sure they get ramped up or whatever, I'm talking about something they're thinking about right now, which is very relevant. So now what I'm going to do, after I do some other steps that I'm not going to give away here, after I do a few other things, now I need to kind of either do a call to action or, better yet, a reverse call to action. So in the context of, so let's just say it's you and you're hiring sales reps in the Northeast. I've started off by getting your attention. I noticed that you're hiring in, to build up your sales force in the Northeast. Now what I'm going to do in the reverse call to action is I'm going to tell you a specific day and a specific time that I'm going to be calling. I'm going to sprinkle some potato chips in there to make you hungry but not feed you. If you want to be fed, then you've got to take my call on such and such a day, such and such a time. So the way that would play out would be that I'm going to be calling you at 9:30 a.m. on August 3rd. Right, or August 3rd at 9:30 a.m. I'm hoping you'll take my call because I have a few ideas that might really help you with that expansion in the Northeast, or with the hiring of the new sales reps, or with the onboarding of the sales reps, or to ramp them up quicker. But do you see what I'm doing here? I'm not talking generically. I'm talking very specifically, and I'm gearing it toward them. And hopefully, I'm going to create anticipation, because if I receive something like that, and I never get anything like that, which amazes me because I'm not some egotistical asshole, but I'm a little more visible than the average person because of my blogging and my podcast and my LinkedIn group and things that I've been doing, right? And just like my work history and all that. And so it's not like you guys can't find anything about me and my company. But if you were to target me and you were to start off by saying, hey, I noticed that, and then you were to hint at the fact that either you could help me with that or that you have something that might be of interest to me with regard to that, I'm telling you right now, I'm taking your call. So that's one of the things you might want to think about, where that email is placed. And the fact that you can kind of create anticipation by using the reverse call to action. You can also use the reverse call to action to let them know that maybe you're going to be dropping in. And what I do in a case like that is I tell them, hey, look, I'm going to be out your way between 1:30 p.m. I give a range, 1:30 p.m. and 3 p.m. on Tuesday. I'm hoping that you have a minute or two for a real quick meet and greet. I actually have something for you that I think might be really relevant, especially with that expansion in the Northeast. Do you see what I did there? Again, kind of like a potato chip to make them anticipate the visit. I could also use it to create anticipation for something that I'm going to be sending to them. And I might say, hey, listen, I know that you're really, really busy, John, because, you know, I know that I've reached out to you a few times and everything, and you're a hard guy to reach. But I want you to be on the lookout for a really cool FedEx that's going to be coming your way on Tuesday. I'm going to have some things that I'm sending along that could really be quite helpful with regard to that expansion in the Northeast. Again, do you see what I keep doing? Referencing something that's relevant to them. Very specific. I'm not calling them or emailing them in this case with something that's like, you know, I just want to talk to you. I want to set an appointment with you to sell you something. I'm saying, I have something for you. And in a way, I'm saying, but you can't have it unless you take my call. You can't have it unless you actually come to the front desk when I stop by on Tuesday. You can't have it unless you open up that FedEx I'm sending to you. Do you think they get a lot of people who use that approach with them? Do you think they get a lot of people that use a reverse call to action? And hopefully you're not answering me right now. Again, that would just be kind of odd. And you will get a random drug test today if somebody in HR saw you doing that kind of shit. So anyway, next. Are you using email exclusively? That's another thing that I experience a lot, where I have people who send me an email, and there's nothing wrong with that. And then I don't answer, and there's a lot of ways this could play out. One scenario is I don't reply to them, and next thing you know, a few days later, I get the email they sent me before forwarded to me again. And somehow the rep thinks that by putting a phrase like, just circling back to get your thoughts on this, that it's a different email. It's not. It's the same shitty email that now I'm not responding to a second time. Sometimes they'll put, just want to give this a bump to the top of your inbox. Yeah, it's still smells like the same shitty email, but with a slightly different set of clothes. All you did, really, not even a different set of clothes. I mean, same shitty email, same shitty set of clothes, except maybe what you did was you put a different color shoelace on. Think like you're changing it up. But anyway, I also see people that the only way that they reach out to me is email. I never get a phone call from them. I never get anybody approaching me through LinkedIn. And by the way, it wouldn't take a rocket scientist to quickly realize that I am all over that platform, that, and I am constantly engaging with people. Same thing with Twitter. I'm there all the time. But I never get any snail mail from these people. The only thing I get from them is email. So, and just so you know, just so that, you know, we're being fair here, is I see this with many of the platforms. I have this one lady that was insisting that I always meet up with her. She's out here in New York and always have to have a meeting with her to sell me shit. She's trying to, I wouldn't say sell me shit. She's trying to sell me on the idea of kind of networking with her, because I guess she feels that my clients could use her services, and, you know, I don't know, maybe her clients can use my services. I don't know. I really don't know. But she insists on meeting, and like, that's the last thing I feel like doing. It's like, if I'm not traveling or whatever it is, I'm busy and I'm home, it takes up a lot more of my time to do that. I mean, I barely have time to go see my own clients that are out here in the local area. So that's not a really like an effective use of my time to do that. But that's the only thing that she does. That's the only way she wants to get together. I have other people that they just keep calling me and calling me and calling me and calling me. And I guess my question to you is, whether it be email, that's all you do, or it's phone. I see that a ton with the phone, by the way. Just like, that's the only thing that they do. My question is, if you're not getting a response from someone, why would you continue? And I don't mean like after one or two or even three attempts. I mean like forever. Like, yeah, I'm trying to reach this Castain guy by phone and he just never takes the call or calls me back or anything else. Like, at what point would a light bulb go off and say to you, hey, look, here's an idea. Maybe Paul doesn't like the phone. Or here's an idea. Paul always gives me a big fat no when I talk about getting together and kind of networking with him. Like, at what point wouldn't you say, hey, why don't we, you know, then jump on a Skype call? Or why don't we do something else or whatever? Or, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's other ways of doing things. But I see that. I see that with people on LinkedIn. I have somebody who, I know them. I don't want to say that it is like a total like cold situation. I know them a little bit. We've kind of like bumped into each other on LinkedIn and stuff. The guy text messages me, like sends text messages all the time. I'm not a big fan of that, but like I never respond to him there. It's an annoyance to me. And it just, but now here's where I'm going to reverse this. Many times we won't do things because of our own opinion about it. Isn't that interesting? So, for example, let's just say that, and this isn't the case with me, but I'm not a big fan of getting a call from somebody, especially trying to sell me something. I prefer emails from people, or I prefer that we engage on LinkedIn first and kind of, you know, that kind of thing. It's kind of like the equivalent, instead of jumping into like a date or a real heavy relationship, hey, let's go meet up for coffee, right? So, but I mean, I have somebody there that just doesn't realize how I like to be approached or whatever. So my thing very quickly that I just want to throw at you is, you know, why don't you like change it up a little bit? Because what can happen is, like in that case that I was saying before, I'm sorry, I just got off track. One of the things that might happen is that, let's just say again, I don't like a phone call. But that doesn't mean that you don't like a phone call. But sometimes it goes beyond that. It's not a matter just of I don't like something. Sometimes we find ourselves saying, well, I don't get Twitter, or I don't get LinkedIn, or I don't get cold calls. That's like, and this isn't me saying it, but some people think it's an archaic type of approach, that there's better ways to approach people. There are people who they say, I don't get social selling. You know, and I'm about to be blunt, so maybe it's a good time to put on your earmuffs, kids. But, like, who gives a shit what you get? I mean, I'm sorry, but, like, I mean, I do, to an extent. If we were talking, I wouldn't be rude and say, yeah, who gives a shit, and walk away from you. Certainly, if you're my client or a prospect, I wouldn't do that. But even as a human being, I wouldn't do it. But, I mean, the people that you're trying to reach, they don't give a shit. They're not making their decisions based on what you get or what you like or what you'd rather do. They have their own preferred platform. And there's no way for you to ever figure it out if you just keep clinging to one. Or even two, by the way. You've got to change it up. So that's another thing for you to think about. The next thing is, how often are you sending emails? And, or really, you know, any, like, if you just look at the cadence itself, how often are you reaching out to them? Is it every single day? Is it several times a day? We have a group called Sales Playbook. In fact, if you are so inclined, you can go over to Facebook and look up under groups, private groups, Sales Playbook. Might even be under Paul Castain's Sales Playbook, but I think it's Sales Playbook. And feel free to join us, by the way. There's a few hundred of us over there, and it's a good group of people that when you put a question, people are very eager to help and engage and all that. And I try to post interesting questions to get people thinking over there. So, you know, for all you humble students out there that would like to be around other humble students, it might be something for you to consider. And if for some reason you can't find it on Facebook, if you send me an email, paul@yoursalesplaybook.com, I'll be sure to send you the link so you can join us. But anyway, somebody put up an interesting conversation over there, like, how much is too much emails? Now, this example that he gave is seriously an extreme example of a pain in the ass, by the way. He had mentioned here that he had received, you ready for this? 13 emails in 5 days. So that's definitely extreme. But there's another extreme, and it's not often enough. Because if you are prospecting sporadically, it's very hard for you to build a relationship with someone that way. The same way in, like, the real world, right? If we were, like, away from prospecting and all that. Imagine someone you don't know wants to have a relationship with you, and I'm not necessarily talking about a romantic relationship, just somebody who wants to be in your life and be your friend and acquaintance or whatever, right? You know, a beer, you know, somebody you have a beer with, a golfing buddy. You guys get the deal. I mean, should I continue on for 15 effing minutes about all the examples it is? I feel like I just went completely bonkers there. But anyway, so imagine somebody shows up and they're in your face, and then they disappear for 6 months. Then they come back hot and heavy for 2 to 3 weeks, trying to get a hold of you, sending you things, stopping by, text message, whatever. And then they disappear for 6 weeks. Then they're back, then they're gone, they're back, they're gone, they're back, they're gone. Again, I can go on for 15 minutes of that. Castain went on for 15 minutes saying, they're back, they're gone, they're back, they're gone, they're back. I mean, what the heck? I mean, would you have a relationship with someone that way? You can't. It never gets off the ground. There's never that sense. You ready? Here comes Uncle Paul's favorite word. So much so he's talking about himself in the third person. Propinquity. How could you build a sense of propinquity, that nearness and closeness and kinship? Or even that sense of, like, bumping into each other in a good way in different places, like running into your neighbor at the supermarket. Then maybe, you know, a few days later, you bump into them at the movies or right there, like, you know, like you're walking the damn dogs and you bump into your neighbor as its dog is taking a shit on your lawn, right? But anyway, you get the point. Sorry, I just had to put that out there because I have a neighbor, by the way, who... they think it's okay because they carry a bag for their dog to shit on my lawn. And it's not okay. I have a dog. And I think they should shit out in the street. And then you clean it up. But that, by the way, that's like a spoiler alert because I actually thought next week on the podcast we would talk about, is it okay for someone's dog to shit on your lawn? I really want to know, and I want to kick that one around. We tackle the tough issues here, the elephant in the room or the dog shit on your lawn. We tackle it here. But what I'm saying is that sometimes we can smother people with too much. Sometimes we can go the other extreme and not too much. See, this is why you want to formally map out your communication. You want to think it out, and that's what we call communication mapping. And what we do here is we think about, okay, well, what's, like, that first touch that I'm going to do in this next sequence of touches or that first attempt, right? What is that going to be? Well, I'm going to do whatever. Okay, how long will you wait until the next attempt, and what will that be? Okay, Now, and it's kind of like if-then statements. If they don't answer or they don't get back to you, what's next and when? See, when you map it out like that, and I'm not saying you have to go like a year and a half into the future. I think you should do it three attempts at a time. Think about like, what are your next three attempts going to look like? And map it out. See, when you map it out, now you can have them setting up the next touch with that reverse call to action. Now you can start seeing, oh, wow, it looks like I have a little bit too much on the email side, or not enough email, or maybe it's too many phone calls or whatever, or too much LinkedIn. But you could also say, am I mixing this up enough? Because if I don't know what your preferred platform is, and again, if I'm just embracing one, I might be limiting myself. I don't know. Might be missing out. So that's one of the things that you can do. You know, and I would put this under the heading of how often you reach out to people. It was a few years ago. I'm a big user of PayPal. I would say that in my business, probably 98% of my revenue comes in through PayPal. So when you do that much volume with a company, you become like, you know, their equivalent of like a high roller or something like that. And they approached me a few years ago. I'm guessing it was 5 years ago when they were rolling out a new product. And I was one of the first people that they wanted to kind of test it on. And by the way, if you own a small business, it is an absolutely wonderful product because eventually I wound up by buying this particular product, and it's called PayPal Working Capital, which is essentially a loan. And what's really cool about it is that it's a flat rate loan that you don't have to worry about, oh man, I got to make the payment on the 12th every month. And you know, like how businesses fluctuate with their cash flow. What's really good is that you make payments automatically. They deduct it according to what you have figured that you can afford to pay back. It might be 10% of each sale. It could be 20% of each sale. I've done 30% of each sale because I don't feel like, you know, owing them money forever or whatever. And it's pretty cool. So it's a really good product, and you're not having to mail them things and everything else. So they approached me a few years ago. And the funny thing is, in fact, I'm not going to tell you what the funny thing is yet. I'm going to hold off on that. Build up a little, kind of going to use a potato chip thing on you, right? So let's give you kind of a potato chip. Have you anticipate that? Let me tell you what happened. Out of nowhere, this lady calls and gets my voicemail. The very next day, she calls again, two times. Now, I'm noticing by the third time, she's almost acting as if I owe her something. Imagine that. The customer owes you something, right? And she's like almost getting shitty. Like we've known each other forever, and I'm not getting back to her. So then like the next day rolls around, and again, it's like two calls, again with the same shitty thing. So inside of about 5 days, I mean, seriously, I had probably 7 or 8 calls from her, including ones that I see it on the caller ID that she didn't leave a message. So it was probably upwards around 10 times. Then she just disappears. And it was almost like, and this is what made me not trust it. I didn't even know if this was a legit person calling me, or if this is somebody looking to get my info and like identity theft, and then we got somebody else running around like an asshole like me, right? Now we're going to have 2 assholes in the world, right? And the world can't handle one of me. Now it's going to be 2 assholes out there. So she, like, and that was it, and she was gone. But now what when she did that, right away, like, I was, like, starting to, like, second guess us. I was like, well, what is this? I mean, like, you know, like how when somebody is like too eager to do business with you, it's like, all right, what's their angle here? Like what's going on? What's the catch? I don't trust this. What a pain in the ass. It became that cat and mouse thing that I'm telling you about. So here's, I told you there's a catch. Here's the catch. I had been looking into the product. I didn't like, they didn't know it. It wasn't like I requested information and I was like blowing off the call or whatever it is. I had heard about it. Another business owner told me about it. Hey, Paul, you should check this out. They're launching it. I just got approved for it and everything else. So what I did was I checked out the page that they set up on the website announcing the new product, all the specifics. I'm like, this is pretty cool. I think I'm gonna go for this, right? And this is before anything that, and nothing was sent to me, just so you know. This is just phone calls that I'm getting from this person. So I had interest in it, but now my interest quickly went into cat and mouse, stimulus response. You're being aggressive, I am going to evade you, right? I am going to put up smoke screens. I'm going to be James Bond now, throwing down oil slicks and shit because I got to get away from you. And P.S., I need your product, but you're annoying me. I need to get away from you. Crazy, right? So I want you to think about that. And the final thing about when it comes to your emails that I want you to seriously consider is how many different flavors of the email do you have? How many different flavors of your email? Part of this goes back to what I said before. Some people out there, and there's a lot of people doing this, so I guarantee you there's got to be some people listening to this right now go, oh shit, that's me. But a lot of people, I'm thinking they don't have a lot of flavors because they keep forwarding me the same shitty email. To me, that shows a lack of creativity. How could I possibly think that you're capable of helping me and providing creative solutions to my business challenges if you can't even change up how you communicate with me? If all you're doing is just doing the equivalent of like showing up at my door and grunting at me, holding the same like note every freaking time, 3 days later you come back like, and you grunt and you hand me a piece of paper, same effing message. And I actually almost said the F curse there. And a few days later, you grunt at me again. You hand me the same message. And I almost said the F curse again there. Two times in one podcast. It's going to happen, folks. I'm telling you. I'm just warning you. It's going to happen. But I will not regularly use it. I'm very content with using the S curse here and there. So I don't know why we're talking about that. But anyway, and I will not edit that out. But it's just kind of important for you to think about how many different flavors that you have. And not every email has to be, hi, I want to sell you something. Or, hi, I want to make an appointment with you so I can talk to you about selling you something. Or, hey, I'm circling back or following up so I can sell you something. Not every email should have that same flavor. I mean, we've got to think about this like a courtship. And to me, what I just outlined right there is the same shitty date. Over and over again, same conversation, same place. Got to change it up. A little spark in that relationship, damn it. So think about the different types of emails that you're sending. And some of them could be passing along a resource or an idea or asking a question or what we call an evidence-based email where you're providing them with facts or maybe a case study or a testimonial to kind of reduce and maybe even eliminate doubt and skepticism and possible objections and maybe solidify or reinforce their need to maybe change something that you can help them with. It might be something where you're introducing them to someone else. But I really think that, again, we can go to extremes. One extreme is I am always saying, hi, I want to sell you something. The other extreme is that I never ask you to buy something from me. I don't believe in that approach, and there's a lot of people preaching that, and that is not practical. That is a recipe for starvation, and I want you to seriously consider if you've been doing that, like the emails you're sending, it's just, I'm going to be helpful, and you know, I'm going to be a go-giver and all that kind of stuff. Recipe for starvation. Because seriously, and or at the very least, a recipe for conditioning freeloaders who just want more free shit from you. So what I think you should do is absolutely give to people. I also think that you are perfectly allowed to remind people every now and again that you're not a not-for-profit. Or in my case, not the Castain Foundation. That, guess what, I actually sell this shit for a living. So what I do many times, and those of you who receive my emails, who listen to this podcast, you're going to see me do it today, who read the blog post, you'll see at the end, I always do this or whatever it is. I don't word it this way, you certainly could. I use a by the way approach, where I'm giving you something, and then at the end, I'm doing the equivalent. Oh, by the way, I'm going to be doing a webinar on this. Or, oh, by the way, this is exactly what we would cover if you had me come and train your sales team. Or, by the way, we have this, you know, this program, this course or whatever, or, you know, this thing that you can download or whatever. You will definitely see me do it today. But I do it all the time. And I have no shame about it, by the way. I absolutely have no shame about it, because here's my theory. Feel free to disagree. I won't hear you. You're not going to hurt my feelings. Even if you choose to call me out and say, I disagree, I'm still going to do it. But my theory is, right now, I'm up to almost 45 minutes on this podcast. If I've just given you 45 minutes where I'm not holding back and I'm giving you a lot of valuable ideas that I've tested and I've gotten great results for people on, if I've given you 45 minutes, I'm going to take a 2-minute liberty. And if you're the kind of person who gets shitty about me taking 2 minutes to tell you that I also sell something that can help you, me and you are not going to be a good fit. Seriously, because I'm not here to be your best friend. I'm not here to be the benevolent Uncle Paul and just give more free shit and more free shit. I'm actually trying to build my clientele. Imagine that. But I got the balls to tell you that. That's, I mean, everybody's doing that, right? That's what we should be doing. So I take a by-the-way approach. But when I'm emailing a lot of the time, if you've subscribed to my list, you get a by-the-way approach. If you're a company that I'm going after and I'm sending cold emails to you, whatever, there's going to be ones in there that don't even have a by the way. It's going to be, here's something for you. Here's an idea. Here's a resource. Here's someone you should know that I could actually buy from you. I'm going to introduce you. Maybe, you know, here's an invitation. I'm going to be doing something out in your neck of the woods, and I'd be happy to help you with this thing. I've got 2 hours that day, or an hour and a half. I'd be happy to stop by with your team and talk about this, this, and this, or whatever. So there is nothing wrong, though, in you also every once in a while doing it. I'm just saying that every email shouldn't have the same flavor. Like, in other words, it shouldn't be just you giving. But on the other extreme, it shouldn't be just you coming at them, you know, buy my stuff, buy my stuff, buy my stuff. There really needs to be a nice balance, and that balance can even be within the email itself. So there you have it, folks. A lot of ideas and a lot of different ways that we can kind of change up the cadence, certainly talking about when and where and how we use email within the cadence. And I'm hoping that the result here is that maybe you're thinking about one or two or three things a little bit differently. My advice to you would be to do the following. And this would be my advice at the end of, and really should be my advice at the end of like every podcast I do. I do this at the end of every webinar, by the way, is, you know, flag something that resonated with you today and take action. Don't just sit here and consume things. Don't just consume podcasts. Don't just consume blog posts or all the videos people are starting to do on LinkedIn. I just put up another one, by the way, for those of you who follow me. Come by and check it out. Or look me up on LinkedIn, Paul Castain, right? As if you didn't know my name by now. Come on. Come on. But stop consuming things and start taking action. Because otherwise, you've just done the equivalent of watching Netflix. There's really no value. I mean, you're committing it to memory, but that's not going to do anything for you. Seriously, I mean, how much stuff have you consumed that you've actually done something with it? And I'm telling you, you're going to get a lot more done if when you come to the end of a podcast or a webinar or a meeting with a group of people and you're learning or whatever, or a seminar, whatever, it doesn't matter what. If at the end of it, you say, okay, what, you know, let's get the action verbs going. What am I going to do as a result of this now? What's one thing that really resonated with me? And then you take the last step, which is kind of deciding on the action item. All right, what action am I going to take now? This resonated with me. What am I going to do with it now? And then grabbing your smartphone and scheduling the activity and saying, okay, this one thing that Paul said about the reverse call to action really resonated with me. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to change up a few of my emails, and I'm going to test it and see how it works for me. And you know what? I'm going to schedule this. This is going to be one of those things. I was going to send out some prospecting emails on Monday. So guess what? Monday at 9:15 a.m., I'm going to schedule this. And then my final suggestion to you is when you schedule these activities, treat it like any other appointment and don't break it. You wouldn't just randomly break an appointment with a prospect or a client or a loved one. Unless one of your loved ones is a shithead, you probably would blow that off. And I think that we'd all back you up on that. And I'd hope you guys would back me up on that. And if my loved ones are listening, I've never done that, ever. But, I mean, you just wouldn't randomly blow it off, but you have to give yourself the same respect. And that's all I have for you this week. And before you go, here comes my by the way. Remember I told you I do the by the way approach. We're going to be talking more about emails and how to stand out, how to leverage them. I even have 50 sales email templates. And I think this would be ideal for really for anyone at any level, at any stage of their career, who has ever found themselves like saying, like, why doesn't anybody ever like get back to me on my emails? Or you feel like maybe you get a little stale with your emails. I mean, for God's sakes, I got 50 different sales email templates I'm going to be giving you. If you'd like to learn more about this, my suggestion is, I mean, we still have a little bit of time, but this little mini course is going to launch on August 9th, I believe it is. August 9th, yep. And if you'd like to learn more, I want you to visit yoursalesplaybook.com/50emails. And that is plural, by the way. yoursalesplaybook.com/50emails. And on that note, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. Come visit us at www.yoursalesplaybook.com.